This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
We're talking about the crop walk of Church World Service, an ecumenical agency that raises money to stop hunger, with Pastor John Sutherland from St. Andrew's Lutheran Church. Welcome, John.
Thank you.
What is the crop walk?
The crop walk is a community-wide interfaith effort to raise funds for hunger relief in around the world and here at home in Champaign-Urbana, scheduled for next Sunday afternoon.
And people actually go out on the street and have sort of a happy parade. The spirit is always very positive, even though it's really designed to raise money to fight a major problem around the world, which, of course, is hunger and poverty and problems with refugees and things we'll get into. But the spirit is always very, very good, it seems.
Very upbeat. It's a celebration, I think, partially due to the fact that all these people from various churches and other religious organizations are getting together to do something really significant and useful.
Now, Church World Service focuses on hunger and relief issues, providing relief to people around the world who need it, particularly in developing countries and where there have been disasters and so on. But it does it by providing food and other things. It's not like Red Cross that goes in with medical help. Is that correct? It's food.
I think they do. They provide whatever disaster relief they possibly can. I don't think it's limited to just food. They do concentrate, as you indicated, for development and self-help in times that aren't disaster, of just building up societies and individuals.
Give us a sense. You mentioned how widespread this is. It's mainly in the Christian community, but it's very much ecumenical in that. Tell us some of the groups that are part of Church World Service.
Well, there are many, I think about 36 Protestant Christian groups, several Orthodox Christian groups, and Anglican. So it's a very broad spectrum across the Christian panorama of denominations and groups that are cooperating in Church World Service.
And I know the YWCA, the YMCA are part of this as well, and many Ys around the country help encourage people, young people, kids, families, to participate in the crop walk. Tell us how it raises money. How does the crop walk end up with money?
Well, each participating organization recruits as many people within their group as they can who are willing to be walkers. And these folks receive a packet and are asked to go out and get pledges from their friends and neighbors who will pay them for the sake of their walking in the crop walk. And that money then is collected when it's all over and is sent to Church World Service and, to, by the way, to several other organizations as well. If, for instance, one of the walkers or one of the organizations prefers to have it sent to their own denominational relief agency, for instance, we Lutherans have one called Lutheran World Relief. If a walker so chooses to do that, that money can be sent to that agency instead, so that no one will feel left out or that they are not fully participating.
Now, this is an annual event, and it's been going on in Champaign-Urbana for a long time. I don't know how many years, but it's continued to be popular with people of all ages.
Right. I've been working with it for about 14 years, and I don't claim to be an expert, but I have done it often, and I am on the planning committee. So I know a few of the details that go into organizing this thing each year. And this year we're hoping for 25 churches or religious organizations to participate. And we're hoping from those organizations to get around 250 walkers. And our goal is to raise $25,000. One quarter of that will stay with hunger relief agencies here in Champaign-Urbana, and 75% will be sent away.
Now, how many people serve on this local planning committee?
Oh, we've got about 10 people.
10 folks mm-hmm. representing different congregations, different religious organizations. And to raise $25,000, is that an ambitious goal this year?
I think it is. It's higher than we've had before. But we hope that each year a few extra people will be impressed by the goodwill that this builds in our own community and by the benefits that it provides for so many other people.
What's the route of the walk?
Well, I'm glad you asked, since designing the map this year was my chore. We are beginning at Pennsylvania Avenue Baptist Church. Next Sunday afternoon at 2 o'clock, we're all going to meet there to sign in. That's located on Pennsylvania Avenue and Anderson in Urbana. The entire walk is within the city limits of Urbana this year.
And that's next Sunday afternoon, April 17 at 2 p.m.
Correct.
Okay.
From there, we will go south along Anderson Street. We have some stop-offs along the way. One of them is the Community Disciples of Christ Church on Anderson and Mumford, I believe it is. Then we're going to head south from there and walk through Meadowbrook Park.
Oh, how pretty.
For years, we've been wanting to include that on our route, and finally we were arranged to do that. Then we will go a ways east on Windsor Road until we get to Philo Road Church of Christ, and that will be another stop off. And from there, we will head back north and cut in.
So that's Race Street?
That's on Philo Road.
Ah, okay. Oh, I'm sorry. It is, yeah.
And then we will go north and west again, and we will go up Cottage Grove to Green Street, and our third stop-off will be the Baha'i Center. And from there, we will return then to Pennsylvania Avenue. It's a route of about 6.5 miles or 10 kilometers.
And so although it's mainly Christian groups that are planning it and nationally that sponsor it, 30 or 40 or 50 or however many it is, locally it's considered interfaith. Baha'is are participating and others, it sounds like.
Yes. The Baha'is have been taking part in it for the past few years, and Sinai Temple has had a delegation. So we are opening the doors as wide as we can mm-hmm. to anyone in the community that's concerned about finding a good way to solve the problem of world hunger.
Okay. We're talking on Keeping the Faith today with John Sutherland, who's pastor at St. Andrew's Lutheran Church and director of the Lutheran Campus Center. Where is that located, John?
Our facility is located on Wright Street at Chalmers.
And John serves on a planning committee for Church World Service locally that plans the crop walk. Many people have seen the signs that are red and shaped like stop signs that say, help crop, stop hunger. And crop is the one of the names for Church World Service. And this is a fundraiser that will be happening next Sunday, April 17th at 2 p.m., starting at Pennsylvania Avenue Baptist Church. Now, John, for people who can't walk or ride a bike or run a wheelchair along this route, I've seen all of those over the years, how can they contribute?
Well, if you can't be an active participant, you can certainly sponsor someone who is. And we are hoping that many people from the community will participate in one or both of these ways, either by walking or by contributing. And if your particular religious community is not promoting this as an organization, you could call me or somebody and see about getting a walker's packet so that you too could secure some sponsors and take part in the walk. I have some extras at my office, and I'd be happy to arrange for anyone listening to get one of those.
And your phone number?
Yes, we are located at the Lutheran Campus Center, and the number there is 344-1593.
And that's in the area code of 217.
Correct.
And crop walks happen in many communities, but each community picks their own time. April is such a wonderful time to have a parade.
It's worth it just to go outside and walk around town. because of the beautiful weather, we can only hope that we'll have weather half as nice as it is today.
And do you have what happens if it rains?
We walk anyway.
Really?
Yeah. We take umbrellas and we walk. Rain or shine, it says we walk because they walk. That's sort of the theme of the crop walk, is because so many people have to walk so many miles for water and food. The least we can do is walk this route.
So people are actually, even though they're in good spirits, they've been motivated because they have thought about people around the world who have to often walk and spend a lot of time and energy each day just to get food and water.
Exactly.
Okay. Let me give the phone numbers for listeners who may want to call with a question or comment for our guest today, talking with Pastor John Sutherland. Here on Keeping the Faith, we have an 800 number where if you're listening to us outside the Champaign-Urbana listening area, you may call us toll-free, 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-WILL, the call letters of the station, of course. In Champaign-Urbana, where the program originates, people may access several local lines by punching in 333-9455. So in Champaign-Urbana, use 333-WILL to reach this program. This is a live call-in program every Sunday from 5 to 6, and try to have interviews with interesting people doing interesting things around the general categories of religion, spirituality, ethics, values. So if you have a comment or a question for any of our guests, do feel free to jump right in. I have a lot of questions myself always, but always happy to have others join in. And we do have a caller on line one. You're on Keeping the Faith with John Sutherland. Go right ahead.
Hi, beautiful day. I've called before. I'm looking forward to the crop walk next week. I'm disabled, but I'm going to walk anyway. I hope that's okay. My question is, do you have T-shirts that signify this, and where do we get them? I went to church today, and they were selling them at the crop walk stand. Does each church offer a T-shirt?
I don't know if each church does. They will be available at the beginning point of the crop walk on next Sunday.
Uh-huh.
So we plan to have a supply of them there.
Okay.
You mentioned that you were disabled. How will you manage to go this distance?
Hey, I'm going to use a cane.
Ah, all right.
My husband told me he probably couldn't walk as fast as I, but we'll see.
Which brings to mind something that you said a moment ago, Steve. You mentioned bicycles. We consider recreational wheels, like skateboards, inline skates, and bicycles, hazardous.
I see.
We do not
okay.
encourage them.
Okay.
However, strollers, wheelchairs, and wagons used to pull youngsters are welcome.
Okay.
So if they're utilitarian, you can come. If they're recreational, this is not the place for it.
All right, fine. Well, thank you very much for the call.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.
So everybody likes a T-shirt for an event. And you'll
I guess
have,
they do.
You'll have them at the start of the crop walk at Pennsylvania Avenue Baptist Church.
Right.
At the corner of Anderson and Pennsylvania at 2 o'clock next Sunday, April 17. John, as a Lutheran pastor, how do you tie in this kind of ecumenical interfaith thing, this kind of activity, with your Lutheran theology?
Well, that's a fair question. Lutherans don't exactly have a tradition for being cooperative, but my rationale is that this is simply a good thing to do, and it is simply one effective way of assisting people who are hungry and who have many other needs that are provided by our efforts as well. And therefore, I think it's a good thing to do, and I think it's doubly good to do because so many other people of goodwill in this community are doing it together, and it is a blessing both to our own community and to the people who are the final recipients of our efforts. I think that we do it. And I rejoice that there is a thing like this that we can have, that we can do together and whose concern we have in common.
Now, you prefaced that by saying that Lutherans, maybe you were partially joking, but Lutherans don't do too many things ecumenically. Why is that?
I suppose it's historic reasons. In an effort to maintain truthful teachings and an effort to resist maybe some of the secularizing tendencies of the evil world around us or something like that. Lutherans have kept to themselves over the years. That is not the case so much anymore.
Mm-hmm. And a program earlier today on National Public Radio, of course, Prairie Home Companion, often has Garrison Keillor making gentle fun of Lutherans, particularly in Minnesota, where many Lutherans live. Is any of that true, or is that all just for humor and exaggeration?
Well, I tell people, I'm a Lutheran from Minnesota myself, and I tell them it's almost all true. although he says it with a certain sense of humor, he's really hitting the nail quite squarely on the head in most cases.
So there is this tendency for conservatism, and he jokes about the Midwestern values of Lutherans. Lutherans came to this country from where mainly?
Most of the Lutherans came from the Scandinavian countries and from northern Germany.
Mm-hmm.
And most of our religious tradition has ethnic roots in those areas.
Okay. And do the folks who came from Scandinavia, those Lutherans, get along with those who came from Germany, or is there a split there?
I think that when they came to this country, they came separately and they settled separately, and they conducted their activities and probably their entire life in their own native language for a generation or two, and so remained somewhat separate over the years. I think as the process of learning English came into the church, and virtually all Lutheran churches now are exclusively English.
Mm-hmm.
That I think that they simply learned to cooperate better as transportation became more widespread and available. You didn't have to stay close to home necessarily. Mm-hmm. And so I think that gradually, like most of our society, we are slowly merging together.
Mm-hmm. But Lutherans, although tracing their history back to Martin Luther, of course, the prime reformer of the Christian church during the time of the Protestant Reformation, the Lutheran denomination among Protestants seems in many ways closest to maintaining some of the things that Catholics have. The same type of liturgy often is found in a Lutheran church. Is that accurate?
I think that is accurate. In fact, I just a few hours ago was at a prayer service at one of the local Catholic churches, and the opening hymn that we sang was one by Martin Luther. The Lutheran Reformation, historically speaking, was a conservative Reformation. They felt like they were making only the necessary changes or reforms in the church that absolutely had to be made. And they were later distressed by many of the other reformers who they thought went too far.
Mm-hmm. For example, how often in a Lutheran church typically is there a communion or a mass?
I would say it ranges from once a month to every Sunday.
Mm-hmm. And what do you do at St. Andrew's Lutheran
Church?
We have
Eucharist every Sunday.
Every Sunday. Mm-hmm. So it would be like a typical pattern of a Catholic church.
Very much the same.
And when Lutherans talk about liturgy, what is liturgy for our listeners who may have no notion of that word?
Liturgy is basically the outline and the pattern of your worship. In our case, the standard liturgy of the Lutheran Church is the traditional form of the Mass of the Western European Church.
Hmm.
So it has certain pieces in it that are somewhat standard, like the Kyrie or the Prayer of the Day.
Now tell us what a Kyrie is.
It's a litany.
Okay.
An opening litany. Kyrie being Greek for Lord have mercy. Mm-hmm. Kyrie eleison says Lord have mercy. And it's and many of the prayers and some of the songs, the communion song, Lamb of God, and so forth, are retained in our liturgical patterns. And I think that's what we would call liturgy. More broadly speaking, it would be any form of worship that's followed on a regular basis.
And we've talked about similarities with the Catholic Church in terms of worship forms and even language. now that the Catholic Church has moved from Latin to English, are there important differences between what Lutherans do in worship in celebrating the Lord's Supper and what Catholics do?
From a Lutheran perspective, I would tend to say no. I don't think this is the answer you would get from the Catholic perspective.
Okay.
We, for instance, when we have a worship service, when we celebrate the Lord's Supper, we open the invitation to anyone who's there.
Hmm.
And I realize that is not the case in many, many other churches.
Of course.
Where there are certain membership requirements or certain preparations and things that need to be made.
So that wouldn't happen in an Orthodox congregation. That would not happen in a Catholic church typically, although some Protestants occasionally have slipped by and received communion in Catholic churches and maybe even Orthodox. But the rules of those churches are to say, no, you should be part of our communion before
exactly.
This is you're part of this meal. So why are the Lutherans different in that regard?
Well, some Lutherans hold to that that attitude. It just happens that we don't.
I see. So that's a difference within the Lutheran community.
There's a variation, a spectrum of openness on that particular matter that is not a battle, especially since I am a church on the university campus. I don't think I or my congregation would benefit at all from having restrictions on who is welcome and who isn't.
Okay. What percentage of your congregation typically are students, either undergrad or graduate students?
About 95%.
95%. Mm-hmm. So it's mostly students. Uh-huh. We're talking with John Sutherland, who's pastor of St. Andrew's Lutheran Church on campus and director of the Lutheran Campus Center. It's located on the corner of Chalmers and Wright Street. And what time are your services, John?
Our Sunday service is at 10 o'clock.
10 o'clock. And you have other programs for students, I know, and we may get into that later. We're talking with Pastor Sutherland about the crop walk that's scheduled for next Sunday, April 17 at 2 p.m., which is an ecumenical. It encourages many Protestant Christians, Orthodox Christians, and others, and organizations, but also locally it's interfaith and open to people who are of other religious traditions, Baha'is, Jews, others, Muslims, I'm sure. Are invited to join in a walk to raise money for world hunger. And it starts next Sunday at 2 p.m. at Pennsylvania Avenue Church. And how long is the total route? How far will people walk?
If you walk the entire route, it's about 6.5 miles.
Okay.
It traditionally has been a 10-kilometer walk, and we try to keep it approximately to that length. We do indicate a couple of shortcuts in case people, we usually think of small children, aren't
sure.
Always up to that length, that long a walk. So you can turn back or you can cut off part of the walk if you're so inclined.
And for people whose cartilages have gone in their knees and have problems with their hips and can't do this at all, they can still contribute. Tell us again how.
Each walker is looking for sponsors. I know some students that I work with are looking for sponsors. I myself am planning to walk, and I have secured some sponsorship.
Another one just in the studio here today.
That's right. Thank you. So we have set a goal. It's probably a high goal of if each walker could get $100, we would be very, very pleased as far as the funds that we are looking for. So so I've encouraged our walkers to try for that, if at all possible. And then I, in a half-jokingly way, suggested that maybe our parishioners who aren't going to walk could each contribute $100. So one way or the other, I think we'll make our goal.
And if listeners don't have a religious organization that they're a part of that's organizing for Crop Walk and asking for donations, you may call Pastor John Sutherland, and his last name is spelled?
S as in Sam, E-T-T-E-R-L-U-N-D.
And that way of saying Sutherland is from the Scandinavian? Or
yes, it is. My father's parents were from Sweden.
Sweden, okay. You may call Pastor Sutherland at 217-344-1593. And since he's here today, you could still call. I guess you have an answering machine probably, and leave a name and number, and he'll call you back. So you may make a pledge over the phone if you'd like to be supportive of Church World Service. We're about halfway through our program. Let's take a slight break, and we'll let our guest in the studio have a sip of water while I tell listeners of a few things coming up here on Keeping the Faith in the weeks ahead. Next week on April 17, we'll be talking about the interesting problems and opportunities that there are for small churches. Most of the Christian churches in America are small, with less than 100 members, many less than 75 or even 50. Some of these congregations are struggling for their own survival. But there are some people who've studied small churches, and one of those is Joe Mann, who teaches at Duke Divinity School in Durham, North Carolina. And he's also an executive with the Duke Endowment that has studied small churches and knows quite a bit about them. So he'll be our guest next week on Keeping the Faith. That'll be April 17. On April 24, part of the I suppose the final highlight of the Whirlwind project here in Champaign-Urbana is the performance of Haydn's Creation, Franz Joseph Haydn's musical piece, The Creation. And Kevin Kelly and perhaps some others will be our guests on April 24 talking about that. Now, John, I know you sing a lot, as many Lutherans do. Are you singing in this performance?
No, I am not able to do this. I just had too many conflicts for the rehearsal schedule.
And you've sung other things, I know, but there'll be a panel discussion on April 28th at 7 p.m. at Hillel with Chester Alwis and Kevin Kelly and Nicholas Temperley, and that's coming up. Hillel Foundation for Jewish Students, the Center for Jewish Students, is at 503 East John. That's the corner of 5th and John in Champaign. And that'll be an interesting discussion. Also, looking forward to that final performance. The performance will be by the Prairie Ensemble, directed by Kevin Kelly, and the Bach Chorus. And that'll be at 7 p.m. There'll be a conversation about what people are about to hear, and then the concert will start at 7:30, and that's May 6th at Wesley United Methodist Church. So Haydn's Creation, May 6th, Friday, at Wesley United Methodist Church, 1203 West Green in Urbana. Tickets are $10, $8, $5 for students and kids. So those are some things coming up, and here on Keeping the Faith on the 24th, we'll also be talking with Kevin Kelly before that May 6th concert. These Keeping the Faith programs are sponsored in part by the University YMCA, where I'm the executive director. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for these programs. The Y is the oldest continuous student organization on the U of I campus. It's been here since 1873, and the Y is concerned with developing student leadership potential by giving students the opportunity to be involved in community service in many different ways. We don't have a gym, we don't have a pool, we don't have a fitness center, but like 22 other campus Ys around this country and 43 in other countries, we focus on university students and on campuses and provide many different programs, not only to help students, but to try to make the university a better place for faculty and staff as well. One of the programs coming up at the Y this next week on Wednesday, we're very pleased to have Dean Anas Al-Rawi. Dean Al-Rawi is a Muslim and Dean of the College of Science for Women at the University of Baghdad in Iraq. And Dean Al-Rawi will be speaking several places on campus, but will be at the University Y on Wednesday. That's April 13, this Wednesday, at 4 p.m., a free lecture. And Dean Alrawi will be talking about the status of Iraqi women particularly. Also, on the Afternoon Magazine, for those who cannot make it to the Y, at 106 on Wednesday, Celeste Quinn will be interviewing the dean. So two opportunities and a few others in town, but at the Y on Wednesday. And then coming up Friday, the Friday forums are over at the Y, but we have a special event coming this noon, April 15. Jean Murray Walker will be speaking and reading her poetry at the Y. Some will remember an interview we had with her by phone from her position at the University of Delaware last July. But she's going to be in this area, and we've arranged for her to do a reading at the University Y at noon. So drive on over. Often on Friday you can find parking spaces about noon, or you can take a bus to the Y at 1001 South Wright and meet Jean Murray Walker. We have permission from the University of Illinois Press to read some poetry from their publication of her most recent book, A Deed to the Light. I'd like to read one more poem by her to let people have a glimpse into her mind that they can experience in person this coming Friday at noon. This is a poem called Letting Go, and I read it also with permission of the author. Letting Go, and I might say this comes in her book following her poem on To My Son Off to College that she read on the air here last July. So she's still thinking in this poem about the experience of her son's going off to college. Letting Go. I walk through abandoned fields of our house, the chairs shrinking from me like wounded horses, the rug crying out under my feet. From cupboards comes the sound of cracking dishes accusing. I was wrong to leave you at the airport. The house wants you. I climb to your room and kneel, trying to breathe you in, but you're not here. In a different room inside my head, I see my grandmother, her gray hair hanging to her waist. Let it go, she tells me as she washes her feet in a dimpled tin pan. She butchered lambs, then asked their pardon on her knees by the blazing wood stove where she cooked them. My grandmother wipes her terrible feet. She is old enough. She has learned how to trust. I think of God, how he lets the universe go, the oceans breaking down the land, stars wheeling toward the dangerous rim. I wonder if he trusts it, the whole savage, delicately rigged up thing. And I selected that poem partly because I think the implied answer to her rhetorical question at the end is that from Jean Murray Walker's religious perspective, the creator of the universe does somehow trust the people of this planet to care for one another, as happens with the crop walk. Well, we have a caller waiting. Let's go to line one. You're on the air with our guest, John Sutherland.
I just wanted to know what's being done locally, what the local agencies are. I think you mentioned it, but I don't think you mentioned who they are.
Our guest mentioned
we support them.
Yes, our guest mentioned that 1/4 of the money raised will stay locally. What agencies will get that money?
I don't have it written down here. I should know this. And I will stand correction if someone out there knows better. I know that a portion of it goes to the Eastern Illinois Food Bank,
which supplies many local agencies with inexpensive food.
And I think the Catholic Worker House gets part.
All right.
And I'm not promising anything to anyone if I'm wrong.
And as you say, some listeners may may know that information. So let me
it
give the numbers.
It slips my mind. I'm sorry I can't answer that question fully.
It's quite all right. Let me give the numbers again so someone listening may know the other agencies locally that will be receiving some of this money raised at the Crop Walk next week. In Champaign-Urbana, the number is 333-9455 to get here at the WILL studio. That's 333-WILL. And even if we're talking to one listener, there are several lines that accesses. So please call if you have some information or have a question for our guest. Outside of the Champaign-Urbana listening area, you may reach this program by punching in 1-800-222-9455, 1-800-222-WILL. And I see we do have another caller, again, on one of our local lines. Let's go to that caller. Yes, you're on the air.
Yes, I just want to fill in the blank for Pastor Sutherland, the third local agency that receives Crop Walk funds is the Time Center. Last year, I believe we donated over $1,200 to each of those local agencies as a result of our Crop Walk. And
so the Time Center, and tell our listeners about what that is.
The Time Center is the men's emergency shelter.
So for homeless men, and
yes.
It provides food as well as shelter.
That's correct. The agencies that receive crop funds must be hunger relief agencies.
Yes.
So those three agencies qualify in that manner serve very well in this community, and I think that our support of those agencies is really important.
So let me just repeat and make sure we have this correct. It's the Time Center, which is for homeless men,
mm-hmm.
the Catholic Worker House, which is also for the homeless, particularly focusing on families, women, and children, and the Eastern Illinois Food Bank.
That's correct.
Great. Those would be the three local agencies. Well, thank you so much for your call.
You're welcome.
And for listeners who may have joined in late, John, tell us again when the Crop Walk is and what the money is raised for that goes outside the local community.
The Crop Walk, an annual event in Champaign-Urbana, is scheduled for next Sunday, April 17th, and we begin at 2 o'clock at Pennsylvania Avenue Baptist Church. There's parking, I should say, in their parking lot on the north side of the church, so don't worry about that. And they've been most hospitable in helping us get ourselves arranged so that we can have registration and our opening announcements and so forth there before we all head out to the streets. We are hoping to raise $25,000, and 75% of that will be sent to overseas hunger relief projects. Our particular focus this year is on providing for fresh drinking water for villages and individuals and people in the, I'm thinking of in Africa, there are many places where drinking water projects are underway, where wells are being dug and the people are being trained how to not only to dig them, but how to maintain them and so that they can have a permanent, dependable water supply. So that's our special focus this year.
And the Crop Walk will begin on April 17, next Sunday at 2 p.m. at Pennsylvania Avenue Baptist Church and go about 6.5 miles. And you mentioned there'll be stops along the way at a couple other religious organizations like the Baha'i Center. What happens at those stops?
We simply ask them to be open and to provide us with drinking fountains and restrooms.
Okay.
There may be somebody there from the Crop Walk team to greet them.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no activity planned there. It is simply a rest stop.
The necessary room, as
yes.
we said in the 19th century.
Indeed.
We're talking with John Sutherland, pastor of St. Andrew's Lutheran Church, and we were talking earlier about how Lutheran theology, although it tends to be conservative, and Lutherans tend to take, at least used to have more of a tendency to stay by themselves, here's an ecumenical project, an interfaith project that Lutherans are, or local Lutherans are taking a leadership role in. Did you get teased about this from your fellow pastors, Lutheran
No.
pastors?
No. They've awaken to the fact that this is an important thing to do. And I think most of my colleagues have their churches involved in it as well.
Okay. All right. When a congregation like you, a pastor like you, people from your church get involved in these interfaith efforts. Today, for example, is the Interfaith Youth Service Day on campus.
Yes, it is.
And I know YMCA students are involved in that, Lutheran students, Jewish students, Muslim students. What are the benefits that come from the fact that these people are doing something together?
Well, the obvious benefit is that you make friends with people. Mm-hmm. You find out that lots of people who did not grow up like you did or who did not learn like you did or who do not have the customs and the background that you do are really nice people.
Mm-hmm.
And that you suddenly begin to discover that we have an awful lot in common with all the other people who are around us. And especially in this context where we're talking about faith communities, I think we have even more in common because basically we're talking about people of goodwill that are people of charity, compassion, who trust greater good than themselves, who have a sense of a divine presence in the world and so forth. And I think it encourages each of us to know that there are that many other people around that that share our concerns, our hopes, our dreams, and that can help us with our fears and our problems as well, because they share those too.
Now, some of our listeners who may disagree with that may be too shy to call in and confront you just directly. So let me ask a couple of nasty questions. Like you said, people of faith are people of charity, of compassion, but aren't people of faith also horrible warmongers and killers of people who disagree with them and narrow? And how do you respond to that?
I respond with a great deal of humility, and because it's very true, and it's very easy to wonder if religion in general hasn't caused more problems than it's solved. And I simply must use that. I can't dispense with my own religion. It's built into me. But I use that as a corrective force in the way I proceed, the way I teach, the way I preach, the kind of leadership I offer. That I hope that nothing that I do will be that destructive, that hurtful, that alienating as some of our great blunders of the past. No religion is free from that. And I think that it reminds us that we are all fallible human beings and that we all have a number of needs that only a more perfect God can help us with.
And another follow-up nasty question. You mentioned the good things that can happen with interfaith activities where people get to know each other across their religious boundaries. But isn't there a danger of that too? I mean, might you not lose your faith when confronted with someone else who believes something very different, who you end up liking?
I suppose that, and I know that this is a fear of many. It doesn't frighten me, but I suppose it's possible that we could end up compromising things that are true to the point where, to a lowest common denominator. But I don't see that happening. At least not in the interfaith and the ecumenical groups I have been involved with. It seems to me that the people who are the strongest in their faith, who have an awareness of the particular unique gifts and strengths of their own tradition, are the ones that are most eager to share that with others and that are the most eager to learn and to benefit from the gifts and strengths of others.
Okay, my final nasty question, and then I'll have some nicer ones, but my final one is what about folks who are trying to convert others? Because after all, there are evangelical Catholics who believe so strongly in the Catholic faith that they think they should persuade Protestants and Muslims and Jews to become Catholics. There are certainly Protestant Christians. Probably the most biggest collection of evangelicals is in the Protestant denominations, who believe so strongly in their Protestant beliefs, their version of Christianity, that they feel it's their number one job to try to get convince other people to see the light. And there are evangelical Muslims. They wouldn't use that term, but there are Muslims who believe so strongly in the truth of Islam that they will try to convert others. What do you do in interfaith settings when people like that are there?
Well, it hasn't been a major problem because, in my experiences at least, these folks tend not to show up at this kind of a project. And I certainly have been confronted with people who are determined to show me the error of my ways and the falseness of my beliefs. And I try to listen respectfully.
It doesn't make you mad?
Oh, it probably does.
It's a little okay.
But it...
But you still listen. Try to listen.
I try to listen.
Okay.
I try to ask questions of them. It seems to me that if another person has all the truth, that there's room for my enlightenment there.
Okay.
And I would try to seek some of that out.
Mm-hmm. If you have a question or comment for our guest today, Pastor John Sutherland from St. Andrew's Lutheran Church, do call us. 1-800-222-9455 is a toll-free number. You may call us even if you're listening on the Internet. These programs can be heard live at will.uiuc.edu, and then click on AM 580 and you'll hear this program live. Keeping the Faith programs, like most other locally produced WIL programs, are archived as well. So if you've just heard part of this program and would like to hear the rest of it at a later time, use your computer, go to that same website, will.uiuc.edu, and the programs are archived there. You can also hear, of course, programs from previous years, and you'll see a list there of guests and topics. If you're in Champaign Urbana, you may call this program 333-9455. So in the Champaign listening area, 333-WILL. My name is Steve Shoemaker. We're talking with John Sutherland about the Crop Walk, which raises money to fight world hunger, as well as local hunger. And it's happening next Sunday, April 17, starting at 2 p.m. at Pennsylvania Avenue Baptist Church. If you'd like to make a contribution toward that cause, you may call Pastor Sutherland at 217-344-1593. We have another caller, this time on line one. Let's go to that person. You're on the air.
Hi there. I came in at the middle of your conversation,
sure.
Sorry. You were discussing some people are upset about religion. They look to the past and see how wars have been declared in religion's name. I've thought about this an awful lot, and I wonder how many of those wars fought on religious grounds were that was just a pretense. And so do you ever respond to those people by saying, it's impossible to know how many wars religion has prevented by, you know, espousing peace and love and brotherhood. So I just wondered if you had some responses to that.
Well, thank you. In answer to your first comment, I would say most so-called religious wars have probably been wars of another purpose, and religion simply is an additional dimension to that. Most of them are not theological debates that they're fighting over, but probably control of people or money or property. I also must say I like your suggestion of asking how many wars religion might have prevented. I don't know how we'd tally that, but it's a very good thought, and I appreciate your bringing that to us.
It is hard to measure goodness, isn't it?
It is. Well, it's hard to measure things prevented.
Uh-huh.
Whether they were good or bad, it's hard to, there's just no way to know how much you might have prevented.
Mm-hmm. In your own interfaith experience as a Lutheran pastor with Muslims, with Jews, with people, with Baha'is, with people from other religious traditions, Hindus, Buddhists, I know you're a member of the Religious Workers Association on campus that includes all these groups plus more. How have you personally benefited from this interfaith contact?
I feel like I benefited a lot, simply because I have the approach that I have had, the exposure to religious traditions other than my own, have been based on getting to know individual people, other members of the Religious Workers Association, and found out that, hey, these are good people. I really like them. I wonder why they do things like they do in their faith and how that compares to what I do. And I have grown a great deal, and I think that, again, the personal dimension of these interdenominational relationships is what makes them work. And I see that as the real hope for cooperation between all sorts of political and ethnic groups.
Mm-hmm. The University of Illinois has an interesting history in terms of religion because for many years there was an official policy that was kind of, I won't say hostile, but at least skeptical of religious groups. And this was one of the last major universities to have courses for credit in religion taught by faculty in an actual program for the study of religion. And there's still on this campus is not an actual department of religion. You can't get a master's degree, for example, in studying religious things or a PhD. Why do you think there's been so much religious activity on this campus in the churches and synagogues and now a mosque close to the campus, and yet there's been this sort of skepticism towards seeing the study of religion as really legitimate?
Well, the program for the study of religion has been going on here ever since I've been here.
I think 27 or 28 years.
Yeah. So that's longer than my tenure in this area. And so I'm not aware of any particular skepticism about it. I have a great admiration for the faculty members that I know and for the courses they teach. And I think that it's a real asset to this university. I think that they teach it in a healthy, academic, open-minded way that is good for all sorts of students to receive, and I think that they are a very strong element of our university community. I'm glad they're here.
I certainly agree, and I've been fortunate to be able to teach in the program occasionally and enjoy the opportunity, and students certainly appreciate the quality of teaching. I'm not speaking of my classes, but at least the others. And But when the religious studies program tried to bring up, you know, can't we teach some graduate courses too for students who might major in religion and want to study it further like you would in anything else? You know, you can get a PhD in all sorts of things these days. But at least here, there's still been resistance at the, I don't know what level it is, whether it's other faculty or whether it's administrative resistance, but it's been a concern of mine. I've been embarrassed that this grand university hasn't taken as seriously as I think it should the study of religion.
Well, I would agree. I don't know either what the source of that is. I suppose there's a lingering fear of legal suits against, in defense of the separation of church and state, and against the use of tax money to support religion and so forth. I don't know if there's rivalry within the administration or the faculty over this issue or not. I wouldn't have information on that.
I think the church-state separation is just a red herring because, you know, we study politics and we don't let professors, push for their particular thing. And the same is true of religion. We have people teaching Christianity who may not be Christians. That's fine. It's subject for academic study. But at any rate, that's just a personal concern of mine.
But you asked in general about the high level of interest in religion at the university. Mm-hmm. It's certainly evident among the students.
Oh, yes.
That when I began my work here, I was a little bit fearful that it would be considered ridiculous to be a religious person. And I, after a short time being here, I'm just overwhelmed with the popularity of religion mm-hmm. on this campus. The number of student religious groups is, I can't count them.
Right.
There must be 50 of us as organized foundations and centers uh-huh. around the campus, and there are many, many other groups. And I don't think that's true on every campus.
Uh-huh.
I developed a theory that maybe in the olden days when transportation wasn't so quick and all the students from Northern Illinois came down here to the wilderness to be on campus and to study here, it was too far to go home on the weekends. And so they religious organizations were set up and organized for their benefit here, and it certainly is a legacy that we share to this day.
Mm-hmm. There's certainly many opportunities for students to follow their own religious tradition
That's
or to
right.
explore others, which is a perfect thing to do during the college years.
Seems like it.
Mm-hmm. We've been talking with John Sutherland about Crop Walk. Say one more time when it is and where it is, what it is.
The Crop Walk to raise $25,000 for World Hunger Relief is going to be held next Sunday, April 17th. Beginning at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, we will meet at that time at Pennsylvania Avenue Baptist Church in Urbana. I would estimate that the Crop Walk would take most people around 2 hours. I've already walked it, and it took me an hour and 55 minutes, and I walked fairly briskly.
And if people can't make it the whole way, there's no shame in saying,
"That's right.
I've had enough."
That's right.
All right, and let me give the phone number one more time for Pastor John Sutherland at St. Andrew's Lutheran Church. If people would like to make a contribution who cannot participate in the walk, it's 217-344-1593. And thank you for our callers and to our guest today, John Sutherland. I apologize to our last caller who just rang us that we won't have time to get to that. But let me do remind listeners what's coming up here on Keeping the Faith. Joe Mann will be talking about small churches from Duke University, April 17, here on Keeping the Faith, problems and opportunities for small congregations. April 24th, we'll be talking about Haydn's The Creation with Kevin Kelly. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for these programs. I'm the executive director of the University YMCA on campus, where we will be hosting this week the dean of the College of Science for Women at the University of Baghdad in Iraq, and Dean Anas Al-Rawi will be speaking at 4 p.m. at the University Y at 1001 South Wright Street on Wednesday. And she will also be interviewed on the radio here by Celeste Quinn at 1 o'clock that same afternoon. Also coming up at the Y this Friday at the 15th at noon will be a poetry reading by Jean Murray Walker. That's at the University Y, the corner of Chalmers and Wright Street, right across from the St. Andrew's Lutheran Church. Thank you for listening to Keeping the Faith, and thanks to our guest, John Sutherland.
You've been listening to Keepin' the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
Mountain climber Warren McDonald was 32 when his doctors told him he'd spend the rest of his life in a wheelchair. It's not that he didn't believe them. After all, he'd just lost both legs. But Warren McDonald refused to be defeated by the worst news he could hear. I'm Tim Fleming. Next time on To the Best of Our Knowledge, we explore good news and bad news and the ways we talk about them. It's To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Tonight at 7 here on WILL Urbana. Programming on WILL is funded in part by a grant from TK Service Center, 806 Perkins Road in Urbana, offering automotive repair on cars and trucks by ASC-certified technicians. In business since 1984, they perform computerized engine diagnostics, alignments, brake and suspension work, and other repairs. A shuttle service for customers is also available. The phone number for TK Service is 344-0800 or on the web at tkservicecenter.com.
Tonight in Champaign-Urbana, partly cloudy with a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms this evening. The low in the upper 50s with southeast winds around 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow, partly sunny with a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms in the morning, then showers and thunderstorms likely in the afternoon. The high in the mid-70s with southeast winds 10 to 20 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, breezy with occasional showers and thunderstorms. The low in the mid-50s with southeast winds 15 to 25 miles per hour. It's 6 p.m. Central.